Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And today the program is your program. This is, we wanted to do a live program taking your calls, emails, to deal with questions, issues, all the things we have not been covering, all the things we missed. And we both have some topics that are of mind for us. And we may sneak a little chef challenge in at the end of the program.
Well, we'd love to hear from the listeners.
Absolutely.
About anything, really, to do with food and wine. So,
and travel questions? As well. First thing on my list is travel.
That's so great. What are you thinking about, Tony?
I'm thinking about the currency exchange to Europe. It's so much better than it was over the last couple of years.
It's so exciting for Americans. I mean, our dollar's so strong, and what a huge difference that makes when you travel to Europe. So it's exciting. Everybody should go.
So please ring us up, 410-662-8780, or toll-free 866-661-9309. Or those shy folk out there that want to email, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org, foremanwolf@wypr.org. And so, Cindy, we'll get started with your list. What's the first topic on your list?
Well, I'm actually thinking about my garden, and I know that we just had snow a couple of days ago, but it is the time of the year where we need to think about, you know, maybe getting seeds going in the house or, you know, however it is that you start your garden. I'm also wondering because when I bought my house 3 years ago, I planted 3 peach trees, which bore 0 fruit last year because of the very hard winter. I mean, it didn't blossom. None of those trees blossomed at all. So I'm really curious to see what's going to happen with the blossoms on my peach trees. And, you know, also I'm just kind of assessing the herbs. I have lavender and rosemary that the plants are, again, they died last winter, a year ago, and they were 2 years old when they died. So I'm hoping that they've made the lavender. I've got 2 different types of lavender and many bushes of rosemary. I'm hoping they made it through. So I need to assess that and just, you know, learning and kind of dealing with planting a new garden.
Why you put the peach trees in, obviously, because you love peaches.
Right.
So what's your favorite thing you ever ate with peaches?
Oh, well, it's quite simple, actually. It's not very chefy. It's a version of something that my mother made when I was a little girl.
Official term.
Yeah. This is really not appealing, probably. But my mother used to take canned peaches because we couldn't always get, you know, fresh peaches, obviously, when I was little. And this was kind of a Sunday night. We always had a big dinner after church. So Sunday night supper sometimes was things like waffles or scrambled eggs or things like that. They were very unusual in my family. My mother never cooked like that. Sometimes we'd have these rolls she would buy. I think they were Parker House rolls, something like that she would buy at the grocery, and she would put cheddar cheese and bacon on. I mean, you know, this is stuff like so unlike my mom. So she would take canned peaches and...
So Mother Wolf's cheating supper.
Yeah, I think it was Mother Wolf cooked all week, cleaned the house all week, raised 4 children all week, and then Sunday night it was time to maybe take a little break. She would make a mixture of sour cream and brown sugar and put it inside the cavity of the peach and broil them. And I can taste it and smell it right now. I mean, it is such a food memory from when I was a little girl. So when some time ago, many years ago, really, probably maybe 22, 23 years ago, I started making a chilled peach soup that I would make from fresh peaches and add sour cream and brown sugar to. And actually, I remember when we first came to Baltimore, I made it for, we did one of the first events we did before we opened the first restaurant that you and I worked in here. I made chilled peach soup for the Zoomerang event. Yeah, which was, that was one of the hottest things I've ever done in my life. What was it, like 98 degrees? And people were in tuxedos and long dresses and, you know, here we were in chef uniforms, but I'm like, oh, well, at least I made something chilled. And but it was a big event back. I don't know how it is now, but back then it was huge.
Peter worked.
People went all out.
We sweated right through our clothes the entire time.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, you guys had tuxedos on too. That's right.
We had to move everything in and out.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, Peter, you and Peter. That's right. So yeah, but that's you know, so that's what you know. I do a million things with peaches, but that's just one of my kind of memories from being a child. And I'm hoping that, one, the trees will bloom, and two, the squirrels won't eat all my peaches. So
you can give us a call with your with what's on your mind. I had proposed in chatting up about this particular live program, if you had recipes that were failing, but you were hopeful about it and you wanted to fix from Chef Wolf or from myself, if you had a wine pairing that was not working out, if you had wine advice that you were after, if you had food selection advice that you're after, if there was travel tips you're after, we're very glad to have you all take over the program this morning. It's 410-662-8780. Easily my first error, not this morning, this afternoon. Or 866-661-9309. Or email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org.
So what's on your mind, Tony?
It's going to sound pretty weird, but English food. British. See, the
no,
fact that you laugh.
No, it's
just
because.
The fact that you laugh is the thing. British Isles food.
I'm not laughing at their food.
But people do. It's always like a punchline. You know,
on
it's
your
like
mind.
There's some great joke about, you know, what's everyone's job in heaven or hell? And in hell, the cooks are always Englishmen, right?
Oh, so, I've never. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what are you thinking about?
I'm thinking that I was reminded this last summer. I was in Northumberland and in Scotland, and the raw product that they have to work with is remarkable. And the expectation maybe of every single person who is dining, who's eating every meal, maybe is not super crazy high, but the potential is super crazy high. And I don't think I ever even opened my mind to that possibility until we'd started getting cheeses from Niels Jarre Dairy.
Oh, yeah, which are amazing.
Which honestly, I mean, they're not as varied as the great cheese of France because of all the different terroirs in France.
Mm-hmm.
But the skill and the individuality and the authenticity and the real flavor in the cheese that we get from the British Isles is remarkable. And I think for what's coming into the U.S., including what's made in the U.S., is the most remarkable that's available right now. And so that's kind of, I'm wondering when that resurgence that maybe was there 100 or 150 years ago. And maybe that was a different time. You were talking about Downton Abbey, and you know, if someone could afford expert cooks, then maybe it's a little bit easier to have expert cooking. But the raw product that's available, I mean, the fish that I had in Scotland, maybe wasn't always cooked beautifully, but the fish itself was amazing. A lot of the vegetables out of the gardens were amazing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The cheese, tremendous.
Yeah.
And
well, and obviously they have good grazing land because they produce great milk in order to make this cheese.
Terrific lamb.
You know, you're going to have good beef, sure. And
terrific lamb, terrific
and lamb.
Beef.
Yeah. So you know, those are.
But I was really struck by how incredible a lot of the fish were.
Yeah, I think that's very encouraging and good of you to say because you know, I think there is a little bit of a reputation, and that's totally unfair. You know, obviously their cooking is amazing. So
it's not often.
They don't get credit for it, I don't think.
You see Irish pubs or English pubs in the U.S., and it's always, you think that's purely a drinking establishment.
Mm.
And if you're lucky, there's something that's survivable that's a stick to your ribs kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
which is a shame.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if people do or don't deliver because I don't attend all of those places on what's potentially there. But it just strikes me it's an expectation thing maybe because I also stopped at one or two places where, you know, traveling, you have to like stop sometimes to grab quick food and keep moving to keep a schedule and that sort of thing. And we did have a few horrific things. I mean, there's a reason that there are punchlines that that end with British food or Scottish cooking, you know.
Well, and also what you were saying about, you know, watching Downton Abbey. I mean, I think the show is amazing because they work very hard at doing absolutely every detail authentically of the time period. And it was a little bit of a surprise to me to see that the cooks in the kitchen were talking about Escoffier and classic French cooking. And I mean, that's what they're producing out of that kitchen.
Well,
that was, you know, those are the wealthiest people in the land at that time. We're having, as you said, cooks that could produce that way. I don't know how common that was in anyone else's homes, but it was interesting to see that influence on the cooking. And certainly, you know, those cooks were looking for the best ingredients and they were farming their land and getting food from their garden. So I'm sure they were eating very well.
Good farmers means good food. So
exactly.
If they're, you know, that's when life was a little bit closer to the land, it still is in a lot of the British Isles.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing that struck me last summer was that it shouldn't be a punchline. It should be, especially when you leave the big cities, just like any time you travel. In a lot of the big cities, which you think of visiting the famous cities in various places in Europe, it's not always easy to find. It's always easy to find food. It's not always easy to find authentic food or traditional food or regional food that's correct. We tend to get a little bit scared of things. We get a little scared of language or we get a little bit nervous about some ingredients that we're not familiar with, and you have to. There's a lot of trust. I mean, you're going to eat it. You know, it's going in your body. It's a lot of trust.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think also people, you know, hopefully people can travel with an open mind. I mean, my goodness, you know, is that not really the reason that we travel, to understand other people's cultures, to appreciate it, to experience it? And we do so through talking with them, communing with them, eating with them, you know, drinking with them, whatever it is, visiting their museums, learning about their culture and their history. And food is obviously such a huge part of all cultures' history and a great way to get to know people.
Well, history says it's pretty much every deal ends up getting made at the table, right?
There you go, right?
One way or another.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're taking your calls live, 410-662-8780. If you have particular travel tips or ideas or questions, chime in with them.
And we'd love to hear some travel stories.
One of the tips that we always try to give, I know I always try to give, is get out of those big cities. I don't spend a whole lot of time in the, usually you're spending more on the hotel room. There are remarkable things to see, but if you actually want to feel a little more of the culture and a little more of the people, and you can deal with maybe the fear of a language and in a place, it's worth getting out of cities.
What's it like driving on the other side of the car?
I was worried about that before. I had not spent time doing that before last summer, and I was worried about that in advance. And I found that I really only had to think consciously once a day.
When was that?
The first time I got in the car.
Okay, sure.
Because when you go to pull out onto the motorway,
gosh, yeah,
you know, it's nice. It's, you really kind of have to think, here's where I drive, this is where they drive, this is different.
Oh, boy.
And if you don't, and I said that I was being laughed at the entire time, because I would say that to myself out loud. You know, I think I was mumbling it, but still,
right?
I'm like, I have to think about this.
I would be scared really to turn. I think the turning would be.
The
would
other
be
thing
like,
that was slightly complicated, were traffic circles.
Oh,
the complicated traffic circles of many exits.
Yeah, that would be.
So, let's take one call before we go to break. We have Mary in Baltimore. Mary, go ahead.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, guys. I love your show. Thanks for having this live show. It's really enjoyable.
Sure.
I can't wait
to
hear the questions.
We love live shows.
Fun to do.
Yeah. We love talking with everybody.
So I wanted to tell you about a great meal that I had once when I was in East Jerusalem. It was a Palestinian meal. It was one of the best meals that I've ever had, and I'm trying to recreate it here in Baltimore.
That's great.
And someone out there probably knows the name of it, but I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. It was basically a dough-based dish that would remind you of a pizza dough in size. But on top of it, they had chicken and local almonds, I believe, from the local almond trees, and onions, and then either that, you know, Middle Eastern spice called za'atar, or it might have been sumac on top.
All right.
And it was
I'm guessing sumac with Palestinian.
Pardon me?
I'm guessing sumac.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was baked, and it wasn't soggy at all, but they had some broth on top of it so that it wasn't crunchy like an American pizza was. It was fantastic, and
sounds
I can't
good.
Quite recreate it here, and I don't know why. I don't know if I'm not baking the dough right or, you know, they had just gotten the chicken the day before, and of course the almonds were fresh. Everything was fresh, and I don't know if that's the difference or why I can't do it here.
Well, that's it. You know, when you're talking about farming in another, especially a place so far away, if you can't get those exact products, it does make it a little bit hard to duplicate the way your memories tell you.
My guess is that the biggest issue is the flour and the humidity, that getting exactly the right flour and to make your dough with, and the humidity when you bake it and having the right baking conditions. That's probably the number one thing. Well, thank you for the call,
Mary. Thank you,
Mary.
That's a great memory.
We're going to go to break now. We'll be back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR in just a few minutes.